Hi, this is Sally, and welcome to Reclaiming Pride, Survivors of Narcissistic Abuse. Moving forward, I'm going to include a journal prompt for us to go with the theme of each episode. This will be a way to continue your healing journey after the episode is over and to reflect further on your own quest to a full life of freedom after narcissistic abuse. Just to let you know, I am an English composition and literature professor. I've got over 27 years of experience and I've taught journaling and storytelling on two different continents. You may want to use a hard copy journal for some of these exercises if you choose to engage in them, as we will be utilizing your non-dominant hand for some of those. So non-dominant handwriting exercises, if you've never come across this before, are a way of using the hand that you wouldn't normally write with to tap into your more childlike persona. It's also to slow down the process of thought and recording that thought to allow the memories and thoughts to flow freely before you capture them in words and put them on the page. So stay tuned at the end of every episode for your journaling prompt, and we can journal along together with the themes of each episode. Before we start, there is a trigger warning. The episodes of this podcast may sometimes refer to domestic violence, emotional, financial, and sexual abuse. This week, we're going to look at the hallmarks of narcissistic abuse. So if you're still in a narcissistic relationship, or if you are free and you have escaped that narcissistic relationship, these are some things that you will either know well, or maybe haven't even named for yourself, or maybe you have, but just listening to them feels like validation for you. And I completely understand that because I do it often myself. With a narcissist, the abuse usually takes the form of emotional, psychological, and sometimes physical violence. And it occurs in relationships where one partner has narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD, or they might exhibit strong narcissistic traits. So this involves a pattern of manipulative and harmful behavior used by the narcissistic individual to control, demean, and exploit us for their own benefit. So in a relationship with a narcissist, we often experience a range of extremely negative effects. So these might include, the first one I'm going to look at is emotional manipulation. So this is the thing that makes you feel very off balance and makes you feel like, wow, something is really wrong here. It's usually one of the first things to give after the initial kind of love bombing stage. So with emotional abuse, the narcissist uses various tactics. That there are actually many, but one of the main ones they use is gaslighting. And they use all of these tactics to distort your perception of reality, making you doubt your own feelings, thoughts, or even your sanity. Gaslighting, actually, the term itself comes from the film Gaslight, which was released in 1944. It starred Ingrid Bergman. She was a devoted wife whose husband is literally trying to drive her insane as part of his plot to murder her. Now, while your narcissistic partner or ex may not literally be trying to murder you, they are slowly killing your will, your self-esteem, your pride. They will embarrass you in front of other people. They will make fun of you in front of your friends. They will basically divorce you from your friends and your family, as much as they can isolate you as possible so that they can actually emotionally manipulate you more without the static of other people saying to you, hey, this isn't right. I don't think this should be happening to you. I think you need to get away from this person. I remember my ex saying to me when I would tell her how I was feeling. In fact, she would goad me to tell her how she was feeling, because what they do is they want to elicit emotion from you so that they can actually feel something themselves, because they actually have a huge void inside and they don't really feel anything. So when I would share how I was feeling, she would say, no, Sally, you don't feel like that. This is how you feel. And then she would proceed to tell me how I was feeling. Now, the problem with anything like this, and if you've experienced it, it is crazy making. It is emotionally degrading. It makes you feel worse than tiny. It makes you feel like a child. The awful thing about something like this is that there's no way to disprove it. And it's very crazy making. So something like this, when someone is telling you the way that you are feeling, and there's literally really no way that you can prove them wrong, there's actually a name for this. It's called the unfalsifiable hypothesis. Okay, so if someone says to you, you're feeling this way, and you say, no, I'm not, I'm feeling another way, you can't actually prove that to be true. And they know this. That's why they do it. It's a tactic that narcissists use in emotional manipulation along with gaslighting. So that's the unfalsifiable hypothesis. It's a way to control you. It's a way to emotionally demean you as well. The next one I'm going to talk about is lack of empathy. Okay, so this is something that I know you would have seen very, very quickly. The narcissist shows a lack of genuine empathy and compassion, that they might try and sort of imitate what they think that looks like from maybe they've seen other people do it. Maybe they've seen it on film or TV. But there's always something that rings false about it, and it's very disconcerting to watch. If you're the partner of someone and they're doing it in front of other people, it will be as clear as day to you that this is an act, because you know this person is completely devoid of this emotion. So I remember with the lack of empathy that she would have absolutely no empathy for others, my ex. She would literally laugh when other people were upset or crying. I remember when her adopted son would cry when he was little, she would laugh, you know, and it's just very, very disturbing to watch. I remember she would yell at me for not having empathy with her. Meanwhile, she had just hit, slapped, kicked me or thrown objects around the apartment. And she would be kind of in the middle of this narcissistic rage, which we're actually going to have a whole episode about that. And then when she would sort of sit covered in sweat, heavy breathing, drooling, it couldn't even approach her because she was so unhinged and violent. She would then look at me with tears in her eyes and scream at me that I wasn't feeling empathy for her. Look at how I'm feeling. How can you make me feel this way? You know, you're a monster. I remember when I was actually going to be moving in with her to an apartment when we lived in New York. I came home from work. It had been a long day. She answered the door because I didn't greet her and quite the way she wanted or in a certain manner that she wanted. I literally, all I said was, "Hi, honey, how you doing?" She didn't like the "how you doing" part because she felt it was too blasé. It was too flippant. This is something that you don't say to your partner. You say it to your friends. She literally yanked my work bag off of my shoulder and threw it down the center of the stairway. We lived on the fourth floor, by the way. So, you know, those old New York apartments, I don't know if you know, but the banisters just kind of curl around in a spiral. As the stairs go down, my bag flew down the middle of all of those. Luckily, it didn't hit anyone at the bottom. But that was, you know, just one tiny example of what you might come home to. No, oh, how was your day? No, oh, well, maybe she's greeting me that way because she's tired, or maybe it doesn't matter. Nothing like that. There's absolutely complete lack of empathy. There was no apology for that because, as you must know, they don't understand the words thank you or sorry. So that never happens. The next one I'm going to highlight is exploitation. The narcissist seeks to fulfill their own desires and goals at your expense. And they use you as a means to an end rather than considering your well-being. So this can take the form of financial abuse. I remember at one point I could not touch my own debit card. I had to take it out of my purse at the end of every workday and put it next to the phone. This is when we had a landline. Put it next to the phone by the door so that I would not be using it at any time without her knowledge. I remember taking cans of beans, baked beans, for lunch because I didn't have money to buy anything else because she was controlling the card. And also I was supporting her because she couldn't hold down a job and she kept literally walking away from jobs or being fired. And I was supporting both her and her son, paying the rent, buying food, paying for his schooling, anything at all. It would all be me. I remember when my father passed away, he left me a relatively small amount of money. And then she convinced us to go looking at houses and apartments in New York, which were way out of my price range, because of the money that my father had left. At weekends, she might say things like, "Let's go out." And it would always be somewhere expensive. Like when we moved to Florida, it could have been Universal or Disney. And there'd be three of us there, a child and two adults. And we'd get there and the time would come to pay and there'll be absolutely no movement from her. She just assumed that that was what was going to happen. And so after a time, I knew this is what was going to happen. So I tried to draw a boundary and say, "Hey, you know, I know you want to go out, but can we wait until this time? Or how about this instead? Because, you know, this is how much I have in the bank account." She would scream, yell, throw things, try and throw me out of the house, throw my things out of the window, down the stairs. Then I would get the silent treatment. And this could go on for up to a week. Then there is devaluation and idealization. So the narcissist, what they do is they alternate between idealizing you or situations with you and showering you with affection, praise, or it might not even be that serious. They might just be nice to you. And that feels like idealization and praise because the rest of it is so awful. Quite frankly, that was a lot of my experience. Then they devalue you. They criticize you. They demean you. And there's nothing that triggers this. There's absolutely nothing that you do. And I need to make this really clear. There's nothing that you do that triggers this. It is a chemical imbalance inside that person's brain. There is nothing that you do to ask for any of this. I remember one time after a particularly bad bout of physical violence, there'd been a lot of silence between us. And then we gradually came back together. And I remember sitting on the side of the bath and she was looking at all the bruises that were on my legs and things like that. And from when she'd been violent. And I remember just her sort of caressing me and saying, this isn't right. And so on and so forth. It's just really kind of then the idealization phase would start. And I remember that went on for a relatively long time. It went on for about 3 or 4 weeks. Usually it was a lot shorter than that, but I remember it went on for about 3 or 4 weeks. And then I remember being in a diner with her and I literally remember her face changing. Nothing was being said. And I remember her face changing and her body changing. And it was like someone else had slipped into her body. And there it was again. And the rest of that day was a complete nightmare. And neither of us had even said or done anything. It's like something happens inside the person. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a chemical shift. I don't know what it is, but I remember witnessing it. And I even took a photo of her in that moment as well. And I look at it sometimes and it gives me the chills because I remember seeing that face again. And I thought I'd never see that abusive face again. And there it was. The next one is the fifth one I want to talk about, which is isolation. So you might know, and you probably have experienced that the narcissist will try and isolate you from friends, family. What this does is it makes you completely dependent on them for emotional support and validation. The thing is, they're not actually capable of doing either of those things. The amount of friends I have lost, good friends, friends who were clearly onto her, the amount of good friends I have lost. And I know that this happens to us. And then people are like, well, it takes two to tango. Why didn't you, push back? And it's like, yes. And pushing back can literally mean you being physically punched around. Pushing back can mean your life being a living hell and you're living in fear every time you move in your own apartment. So you just don't. You don't. You, and also you're kind of trapped in it. You're almost brainwashed to a point where you're listening to everything that this person says as if, you've always needed this kind of straightening out. I remember probably the worst example of this was with my mom. And my mum was a psychiatric nurse as well, and she was of many, many years' experience, and she was completely onto her. And I remember her saying to me once when we'd actually gone over to visit my mum that my mum shared with me when wasn't around that we'd been talking, me and my mum, in her living room, and then had come over and come into the living room, and my mum told me that she saw my whole physicality change. She said, I saw your whole body language shift. You're really, really afraid of her, aren't you? And I didn't even know she'd seen it. Probably one of the worst things that's ever happened to me was that I was back and forth actually between Christmas 2019 to 2020 because my mum was in and out of hospital and I used to go over to the UK to spend Christmas with her. And I literally just got a promotion at work. So my boss had even said to me, please don't come back. It's totally fine. You stay there. That's where you need to be. You spend time with your mum. But my ex persuaded me to come back, and with the kind of the caveat that I would leave again in 3 weeks because that would be spring break. And they moved my mum. We'd arranged this though, but they moved my mum to a nursing home, and I never saw her again. She actually passed away. And to this day, I know that if I had not have listened to my ex, if I had have done what it was that I knew I should, then I would have been able to spend those last moments with my mother. The next one is emotional roller coaster. So this is where we experience the emotional highs and lows due to the unpredictable nature of this person's character. So this can mean that you literally never know who you're going to come home to. There could be anything that triggers this person, absolutely anything, or actually seemingly nothing. You can walk in, go upstairs or go into another room, and then one person, and then you could come downstairs or come into another room and they are literally something else. Something is triggered. It will trigger things like screaming at you, objects flying, and then they will become weirdly calm, you know, and or it may be that you walk in and they are seemingly just oddly calm and serene, which is really unusual for them. I remember that happening. I remember thinking, oh, you know, has she been drinking or something, you know, which is obviously a trigger for me as well, because I used to come home to my mom and she would be drunk and I would just always know walking up that garden path to our little flat whether she was drunk or not, because I'd hear the Rolling Stones or Otis Redding coming out of the window and I'd know she was drunk. So not knowing what you're coming home to with someone like this emotional roller coaster for many of us who actually end up with these individuals, with these narcissistic personality disordered individuals, actually come from fraught childhoods where we did not know what we were coming home to. I actually remember a colleague who I'd had a heart-to-heart with and told her everything. She actually kind of guessed most of it. It was interesting. And I remember her saying to me, Sally, you are living within a hair's breadth of what you grew up in, you know? And that was, my God, that was such a hard thing to hear. And she was absolutely right. And then layer on top of that, the seventh thing, guilt and self-doubt. So the narcissist might try and make us feel responsible for the problems in the relationship. Anything that leads to the violence, anything that leads to the stonewalling, the gaslighting, the throwing things, the silence, the financial hardship, anything that leads to any of this is always your fault. I remember it was about my bad financial management. It was about my fear of intimacy. It was about my social awkwardness, my lack of friends. Meanwhile, it was extraordinary that the person that was saying it was all of these things incarnate, you know, and what they do is they project on you so hard that it's just absolutely mind-numbing. It's you cannot believe what is happening here. But at first, you will be who she called me. You will be Guilt Girl. I don't know if you remember from the first episode, I was telling you that we met in a healing circle in the Adult Children of Alcoholics meeting at the LGBT Plus Center in New York City. And she had literally labeled everyone in the circle in her mind, and I was Guilt Girl. So she knew even before she knew me that was something that she could use to manipulate me, that I have a high sense of empathy, that I have a high sense of accountability, even when I probably shouldn't have. Sometimes I'm patient for all the wrong things. Clearly I was patient for this person for 13 years. But when they see these vulnerabilities in you. So for example, empathy is a beautiful quality, but what they see it as is a gateway, a door, an in to how they can manipulate you into feelings of guilt and self-doubt. So narcissistic abuse can be severe. It can have long-lasting effects on our mental health, emotional well-being. We've felt trapped, helpless, sometimes unable to break free from that toxic relationship. I know I felt trapped for years. I literally at one point thought, well, I'm going to die in this. But over time, our self-esteem and self-confidence are eroded. They can lead to feelings of worthlessness, and you don't even know it's happening at times. You don't even know it's happening. So now that's really kind of where you end up, kind of at the foot of that relationship or situationship. So now that we've looked at really the aspects of narcissistic abuse and what it can feel like, I'd like to take a look at some ways that we can move on from it, that we can seek to care for ourselves and nurture ourselves and curate a life of freedom for ourselves. And then after that, I'm going to do the first journal entry prompt after this break. And welcome back. So now what? What about healing after a relationship with a narcissist? Is it possible? Well, it can be very challenging and it's a complex process. And the thing is with the healing after it, I'm still in the process. So there's nothing anybody can tell you about how long it should take or not take. That is completely up to you. And it's not even a conscious decision that you're making. It takes as long as it takes. Is what I can tell you from experience. These relationships can leave us with deep emotional scars that just have this lasting impact on us, our self-worth, our overall well-being. And so I think some of the major steps that I've noticed are some of the steps and strategies that have helped me in my healing journey so far are the following. So first of all, acknowledging your feelings. Now, you can do this for yourself. It also actually helps if you can talk to someone who knows you very well and also may have known the narcissist and you together. You might find that afterwards they will share things with you that they noticed or not, but it's really good validation to actually talk to someone who knows you really, really well. That, you know, I have a friend, my best friend actually, and I've known her for 30 years. This year will be 30 years. And now, you know, she shares with me some of the things that she observed, but she always knew it was wrong. But she stood by me and she stuck with me and she listened and she helped me and so on all the way through it. So just allowing ourselves to feel just the full range of emotions that come after this narcissist leaves. It's normal to experience anger, sadness, confusion, even relief. Try not to suppress anything that comes up. Okay, just let it all flow through you. Acknowledge it, validate it. It's valid. It matters. It's true. It could even be as complicated as sometimes a song might come on and you might miss the person. Acknowledge it. It's valid. It's true. You know, not 100% of that relationship was completely awful. You know, there's a good sort of maybe 1% of it or 2% that was so great. Because honestly, the contrast with what wasn't made it feel even greater, even though it was probably just ordinary. But you do remember the times you laughed together. You do remember the times that were good. For me, that's when my form of acknowledgement is actually reading about narcissistic abuse or listening to another podcast about it. The thing is, I haven't actually found any podcasts that are specifically for LGBT+ people. So that's why I'm doing this one. I would have given anything to have heard a woman talking about her relationship with a narcissistic ex who was also a woman. And I would imagine that anybody in any kind of relationship would want to feel acknowledged in that way and have their kind of relationship mirrored back to them, even if it's to talk about how it was awful. So that's acknowledgement of feelings. So the next one is educating ourselves. So try and learn about narcissism. So this podcast might be one way that you're doing it. There are many ways to do it. Read books, watch movies. You can watch Gaslight as well. That's always a good place to start. Read about narcissistic abuse and its effect on relationships. You can therefore understand the dynamics of the narcissistic behavior that was in the relationship with you. You can help make sense of your experiences and realize that the issues were not your fault. So education is always the way for something like that. The next one is no or limited contact. Sometimes this is called the gray rock method. Okay, so the gray rock method is not something where this isn't the kind of podcast which you may have heard other podcasts about this or read other things like this where these are the ways to get one over on your narcissistic partner, or these are the ways you can fool them. No, none of those things in my mind are healthy advice. It's more go no contact or limited contact. So limited contact is usually for people who have to have contact with the person because there might be children involved, pets, some kind of financial obligation that you cannot immediately remove yourself from. So that will be limited contact. No contact is preferable, of course, with someone like this. I'm completely no contact with my ex and have been so since the day she left. And I wish it to stay that way for eternity. So that would be no contact. So earlier on, just now, I mentioned the gray rock method. So the gray rock method is when you have to have limited contact. What you do is you're basically literally turning yourself into this kind of gray rock, which is just a hardened outside that nothing can penetrate. If someone needs information, you literally give it. That is it. You are, hello, goodbye, not even that if you can help it. If you have to communicate with the person about picking up the kids from school or something like that, keep it as minimal as possible. So this is called the Gray Rock Method, and it's something that might help you cut off some of those kind of word salad-y tunnels or hard lefts that this person drags you down to try and get you into an argument or get you into feeling demeaned. And of course, they love doing that in front of children, in front of your children. So that's one way to do it. You can cut off communication and prevent further manipulation if you can go no contact. It's a pretty lengthy process. I literally have cut off everything. So it would be everything from every way of contacting you, whether it's from all your apps, your phone, your email, all the emails. You can even block someone on LinkedIn. So just absolutely everywhere that you can block the person, if you can, I would recommend it. The next one is seek support. So you might still be in a relationship with your narcissistic partner. Even if you are, it's never too late to seek support, okay? You can reach out to friends, like I said earlier, family members. You could seek help from a therapist. You can do that online now. All of these people can provide emotional support, a safe space in which you can talk about your experiences. There are support groups for survivors of narcissistic abuse as well, and this can also be beneficial. So any kind of support that you can seek outside of yourself and what you can do for yourself, I would highly recommend that. The fifth one is setting boundaries. So as you heal, try and establish healthy boundaries for yourself. So learn to recognize the toxic behavior and protect yourself from it. Another way of setting boundaries is actually an internal way of setting boundaries. You can stop that tape from playing inside your head. So for example, if you feel like treating yourself to something when you go out shopping, it could be, you know, a Starbucks, it could be a t-shirt. That voice might be playing in your head that you're selfish. Why are you doing this? This is garbage. Why do you waste money this way? All of these kinds of things. So you can set boundaries even for yourself and know, no, I can do that for myself because I earned that money. It is mine. I can spend it and manage it however I wish. So as you heal, just kind of allow yourself to slow down those moments and allow those boundaries to be set. And it's okay to do that. They're not wrong. They're not in the wrong place. Just allow yourself to set those boundaries. Next, we have self-care. So number six is self-care. So prioritizing self-care activities that nurture your physical, emotional, and mental well-being. Try and engage in activities that bring you joy. So that could be absolutely anything. If the person used to criticize you for playing video games, but that's something that brings you joy, break out that Xbox, that PlayStation, whatever it is that you have, that Switch, and you go ahead and you do that. Whatever brings you joy, relaxation, and a sense of accomplishment, go ahead and do that. That even might have you making new friends and friends that you would never have made if that person was around. And I know that that's definitely happened for me. I'm a fan of lots of shows, and I've been online and I've actually met these people and we've traveled together. None of this would have happened while I was in the relationship with that person. And it's, you can look back and feel, oh, you know, if I hadn't have been in that relationship with her, all of the other experiences I could have had, all of the other friends I could have made, but there's no way that that could have happened for you in that situation. So the only thing that you can do is move forward and nurture and prioritize that self-care for yourself. The next one is therapy. Please consider seeking therapy from a mental health professional who specializes in trauma and abuse recovery. I cannot stress that enough. Therapists can help you work through your emotions, rebuild your self-esteem, and help you to develop different coping strategies and help you with those boundaries that we've been talking about just now. When I said I couldn't stress that enough, you really do need someone who deals with trauma and abuse recovery. You might also need someone who deals with domestic violence as well. I would highly recommend someone with those specialties in their tool bag as a therapist, because that's exactly the kind of listening ear that you're going to need. The next one is something that we've actually woven into this podcast, and it's journaling. So you can keep a journal. It can be a very therapeutic way to process any of the emotions that you're feeling, either during or after the narcissistic relationship. I actually kept journals all the way through it, and I'm going through them now and kind of collating them and picking out all of the red flags because I'm actually writing a book about it. So you can track your progress after the relationship is over. You can gain insights into your own healing journey. You're recording all of the things that bring you joy or any dreams that you might have where something got kicked up for you. Anything like that is very therapeutic to journal. So if you do journal already, I highly recommend you continuing. And you might want to insert some of the prompts that we have at the end of this podcast. Number 9 is focusing on personal growth. So using this time to rediscover yourself, your passions, your interests, your strengths, engaging in personal development that can help you regain a sense of identity that was stolen from you. This is, I cannot emphasize this enough. And what will happen is as you do all of the other things that we've already mentioned, these are all forms of personal growth. So what's going to happen is you're going to start noticing that you regain your identity. You, no matter what age you are, listeners, no matter what age you are, you're going to start discovering new things about yourself. There are so many famous writers and artists and, you know, engineers and all kinds of great minds that didn't do anything until they were in their 50s. All right, so just bear that in mind. Personal growth is actually cuts across all of these ways of helping yourself that we are talking about today. The next one, number 10, is practicing self-compassion. So be gentle with yourself. Try and avoid blaming yourself for all of the times and all of the things. You've just been through way too much of that. Recognize that you deserve love. You deserve respect. You deserve the happiness that was robbed from you by this person. The next one is mindfulness and meditation. So these practices can help you stay present, to manage anxiety, to tap into parts of your mind that you may have thought had died or been so eroded that they've been forgotten, but they're still there. It can also help to reduce rumination about the past. You may even find if you start to do breathing meditation where you just focus on your breath and every time you have a thought, you just label it thinking, let it pass across your mind like a cloud across the sky, and then come back to your breath, you may actually find that you start to become quite emotional. This is really common for folks who have CPTSD. So that's complex PTSD. That means you have trauma from many different sources. So you may have had a traumatic childhood that led you into an abusive relationship. And now that you are out, it's all compounded. So when you meditate, what that does is it relaxes your mind. It frees your mind to stop thinking, and it actually helps you to feel. So don't be surprised if you actually get a little emotional when you meditate. That's very healthy and it's fine. The next one, number 12, is try and avoid replacements. So what I mean by that is it's common to seek new relationships shortly after the narcissistic one ends. Try and take time to heal, rebuild your sense of self. This is crucial before entering a new relationship. So I've been single now for, when did she leave? Just over 2 years ago. So I've been single for all of that time. And I literally don't feel as if I am ready to be in a relationship because I feel that there's still a lot of residual trauma there. But also I'm actually enjoying just being with myself. I have a wirehaired dachshund whom I adopted about 2 months after she left, and it's he and I, and we have adventures, and that is amazing to me. I never thought I would have this freedom. I never thought I would have my life back, but I do. And so, you know, I'm just avoiding replacements for now. Forgive yourself is number 13. So understand that it's okay to have been in a difficult relationship. It's okay to have made certain choices that you made because you were trapped, because you were abused, because you were brainwashed, because you were tired, you were depressed, all of these things and more. Forgive yourself for any perceived mistakes or shortcomings. You spent all of that relationship being told that everything was your fault, no doubt, that you had so many shortcomings that they were hard to list. So just forgive yourself. And the last one is patience. Patience and healing, it takes time. So like I said, right at the beginning of this list, no one can tell you how long this will take. No one. You might have people asking you, are you going to look for someone else now? Or, hey, it's been a while. None of those things matter compared to your own well-being and your own healing journey. So be patient with yourself and acknowledge that progress might be slow, but it's still valuable. Through all of this, please remember that healing from narcissistic abuse is a process and everyone's journey is unique. It's important to prioritize your well-being, surround yourself with supportive people, and engage in activities that contribute positively to your recovery. And as an LGBT plus person, you know, you might want to nurture those relationships with your LGBT family, because that's also important. It's also a way of self-validation, because in our lives, we've often had invalidation at an early age because of who we are. And so seeking that validation from our LGBT plus allies, friends, family is always an extra layer that is so helpful for us in our recovery, in any kind of recovery. And also, you know, I've actually met some people since the end of that abusive relationship who are LGBT plus and were in similar relationships to this. And I cannot tell you the amount of validation that there is in discussing the things that we went through in those relationships as LGBT plus people, with those added layers of hiding and not being able to talk. Even if you have a good weekend with someone, sometimes when you go into work, you cannot talk about it, let alone going into work and talking about something awful that happened to you with your same-sex partner at work. Even it's just the simplest things, cutting through the heterosexual assumption when you're having conversations with people about what you've been through, all of these things. So I would truly, truly recommend the remarkable support that you can actually have from folks in the LGBT plus community as well. If you find, though, that your healing process is particularly challenging, please don't hesitate to seek professional help. So finally, we have the journal prompt for this week. And as promised, this is going to be a non-dominant hand journal exercise. Okay, so you're going to need your journal. Your journal could be anything from a lovely book that you got from Barnes & Noble to a piece of paper that you just collect each time you do these journals and you put them in a folder. It's completely up to you whether you're a stationery freak like I am or whether you're someone who will just do it on the nearest thing that comes to hand. That's absolutely fine. No judgment at all. So we're going to turn the clock back a little bit with this one. So what I'd like you to do is take the pen or writing implement that you have and put it in your non-dominant hand. Okay, so if you're a right-handed person, that's going to be your left hand, and vice versa. All right. What I'd like you to do is write about a time in your childhood when someone apologized to you. Why were they apologizing, and how did this feel for you? Give yourself 5 minutes. So put the timer on your phone or the kitchen timer or look at the clock or whatever it is that you have. Give yourself 5 minutes. Once the pen or pencil hits the paper, do not stop writing, no matter what. I know it's hard, but try not to stop writing. Keep going for 5 minutes on a time when someone in your childhood apologized to you. Why were they apologizing, and how did this feel for you? So what you're just about to do is a form of free writing, and this is designed to open up your more subconscious mind. So once you've finished doing this, read the piece out loud and reflect on what that incident taught you, and reflect on how far you've come from that to today. I'd also encourage you to reflect on the fact that you deserved that apology because the person had wronged you in some way, whether they meant to or not. Please note, this podcast is not intended to replace professional therapy or counseling. It serves as a supplementary resource for support and encouragement. Listeners, you are encouraged to seek professional help if you need it. I did, and it works for me every day. Stay tuned, and I look forward to healing with you next time. Bye-bye.